We just arrived at Universal City Walk. We have to review The Mummy. I hope it doesn't suck. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, joined by Anthony Ray Bench.
How's it going, everybody?
Ready for a show live from Universal City Walk.
Yep.
And so it's okay. So here we are. We're at Universal City Walk, but it's so loud here that we're recording this intro to the podcast in Anthony's car.
Yeah, there's a ton of copyrighted music playing all over the park.
It's not even about the copyrighted music. It's that the music is so pervasive and loud and everywhere you go. I mean, look, we're here for an early screening of The Mummy, which we'll talk about after we see it. We're gonna catch you up with some films that we've seen recently, and then we're going to go into the screening, and then we'll talk about The Mummy after. But Universal City Walk, I find incredibly annoying. I like Universal Studios. I will admit I am an annual pass holder. It's super cheap. It's only like $100 if you're a California resident. But I like it for the Harry Potter land, which I think is amazing. But Universal City Walk is the height of annoying. Am I wrong?
Why? Like
it's
no.
Because it's just loud and obnoxious. Okay. They're playing those music videos on the big screen. And I have been at Universal City Walk sometimes where I'm talking to the person next to me and they can't hear what I'm saying.
Okay. I get you. But Downtown Disney is the same way. It's that kind of...
It's not loud. They're not playing music everywhere, though. It's not as obnoxious.
Fair enough. City Walk is a home away from home because every weekend I was here working the Kevin Smith shows. So I have a special appreciation for it. And especially now, I don't get out to this area very much. So I love going back to City Walk.
All right, well, we'll walk around and you can think your fond memories.
Yeah, okay.
Cool. All right, but we're here for a screening of The Mummy, which I think, you know, we'll talk about it after and we'll give you the full story. What is this? Okay, so this is just a dumb app that I downloaded. I think it's called Hamhorn. And this horn is called Movie Horn.
Nice.
Which is, you know, like every one of the Chris Nolan movies or...
Every single freaking one.
Or every trailer you see.
Yeah.
Someone says something.
Gong.
Yeah, that gong thing. Okay, so... But let's launch into it, because we have not done a podcast together in a while. Well, last week was Joe McClane, but we haven't, like, been together in some time. So we're gonna catch you up on a couple of films that we've seen recently. And Anthony and I both, we should talk about Twin Peaks.
Yeah,
because you have not seen it.
I've seen the original series, and I'm really excited to pick up on the return, but it's just, I wanted to rewatch the first two seasons.
Irrelevant. Yeah. You don't even need to watch it. You don't need to watch it.
See, I've heard different things from different people, though.
Well, like, those different people are idiots. Okay. Let me just catch you up. So,
sure.
So real quickly, I've watched the first five episodes at this stage, and it is pure... If you're a David Lynch fan, it's pure David Lynch. It owes more to Eraserhead than it does to Twin Peaks.
I've been hearing.
If you want to understand, or understanding actually this season of Twin Peaks is irrelevant. It's not about understanding. It really is about it's just about experiencing a master of cinema at the height of his craft. I mean, Lynch here, it's like, because I kind of feel like David Lynch went away for a little bit. He made, you know, Lost Highway, and then a couple of smaller films, not with bigger budgets. This, he had $50 million to do 18 episodes of Twin Peaks. We're five episodes in, and I'm hooked. It's just, you just have no idea what to expect. Yes, there are through lines. I mean, Kyle MacLachlan plays three characters. Some people say five characters. Wow. He's Agent Cooper, but he isn't. He's altered. He's in someone's body. It's bizarre. And I what's weird is I think some of it is actually going to make sense. And then David Lynch is just going to flip it and it's not going to make sense. He's using just visual tricks that, you know, I mean, Eraserhead was like a student project when he was at AFI that went on for years. And just watching... it's just one of those things you just want to turn on and just experience. Kind of like, here's what it is. David Lynch is sort of like, you know, when you get one of those albums that has the 15-minute song where the band just riffs
and
tries stuff out.
Yeah, the experimental
stuff. Yeah, that's David Lynch right now. Mm. He is just, this is just the experimental stuff. He's riffing. He's clearly having fun. And the episode where you see an Agent Cooper, like, clone or copy or whatever, go to Vegas and just scream, "Hello!" is just, it's just bizarre and weird. And I love every minute. I've loved every minute of it. It's just, it's not for everybody. But I do think
the original Twin Peaks wasn't for everybody.
Well, the original Twin Peaks, the one thing that he has excised, which is why I think that some people are criticizing it and are not into it, is that he's sort of excised the soap opera element. Mm. Because in a way, the original Twin Peaks was kind of a parody of old school soap operas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's incredibly melodramatic. Everything's really melodramatic. This Twin Peaks is not that. Hmm. It's evolved. It's using some settings and some characters from Twin Peaks, and it's filled with mystery, but it's even difficult to talk about this show. But what I love is it really is, if some of your favorite sequences, one of my favorite sequences from Eraserhead are just all the dream sequences.
Yeah.
And in a way, Eraserhead.
Terrifying stuff.
Right. For me, Eraserhead captured what it's like to dream. Mm-hmm. Nothing makes sense. So what I would say, if you enjoy you don't care about traditional storytelling, three act structure, or things making sense, you will love the new Twin Peaks. So if you like to be challenged, if you want a divert from the normal every TV show that you watch, this is the show for you. And it is challenging because it doesn't do what you want it to do. I want things to make sense. I want it to do this. It's not going to.
Yeah.
So don't even come, just go into it without those expectations. So we're 5 episodes in. I hope you'll catch up. We'll do a special Twin Peaks episode where we'll talk about, I didn't expect to talk about Twin Peaks this long. Just mention that I've been watching it. But
I'm 7 episodes into the original series, and I think like it only has what, like 13 episodes a season?
No. The first season was shorter, then the second season was longer, and it kind of lost its way.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, after they solved the murder of Laura Palmer, then the show just couldn't figure out what it wanted to be.
Yeah.
But what this show is in some things that make sense, and some things where he kind of teases that there's going to be a story, and then he just completely throws away everything you think you know. And I love that.
Well, I'm stoked for it, and I think I'm still going to wait just to finish the original series again, because I've been meaning to rewatch it anyways, even before the revival was announced. But I can't wait. Like, I can't wait. I'm just going to binge the rest of the episodes.
All right. Yeah. Well, why don't you catch up? All right. So let's talk about some movies that we saw.
Sure.
All right. So first thing, thank you, Anthony, for letting me borrow your Hulu password.
You're welcome.
So that we could watch Dumb.
Yeah, for a second there, I thought you were going to give away my Hulu password.
It's actually, yeah, it's actually a good password.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, but okay, so this is a documentary called Dumb, and it's the story of Big Brother magazine.
Yes.
So I'd like to hear your impressions of it, because I was a reader of Big Brother magazine when it first came out. Big Brother magazine is, if you were not aware, is where a lot of the people from Jackass came from.
Yeah.
And Big Brother magazine was an independent magazine that was about skateboarding, but really wasn't. It was about the adventures of all the cast of crazy characters from the Jackass series and movies.
Yeah, like Wee Man, Pontius.
Wee Man, Johnny Knoxville, all those guys. So they all kind of came together through Big Brother magazine. And Big Brother magazine, every issue was different. The logo was never the same. It broke traditional magazine and print magazine methods, you know, just like of consistency. The articles were about like how to kill yourself. You know, crazy, weird articles that gave instructions on how to kill yourself. They did an issue called the Kids Issue, where they asked kids crazy questions like, "Hey, would you like to fuck your mom?" Like,
yeah.
And then they would say, "No, that's gross. What if you could be as good a skateboarder of this, but you'd have to fuck your mom?" Like, weird, crazy, shit that they would do. And it was a magazine that came out like around in the sort of early 90s to mid 90s was its height. And then when Jackass took off, all the cast of characters kind of went off and did Jackass, and the magazine went under.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear your impressions of it, because I have some very specific thoughts about Dumb.
Yeah. I loved it. I think it's for a very specific audience. I don't see anybody who doesn't like Jackass and doesn't like the personalities that...
Now, why did you love it?
Because...
And also, I am banning you from saying I loved it.
Okay.
This is the lowest common denominator of film reviewing or opinion. I loved it. I hated it. Fuck that shit. We're going to do different stuff. So you have to back shit up. Back it up. Back it up.
I was.
Back it up, bench. Back it up, bench.
God damn it.
Back it up. Let's see. I loved it. Why? Why?
I was telling you why.
All right. Well, let's go.
I was telling you why, and then you cut me off.
All right. Sorry.
Story of my fucking life. Anyways.
Okay, but let's hear it.
I identified with it. Like, I grew up in the 90s.
Did you skateboard?
No, I rollerbladed, actually. Right, okay. But I hung out with skateboarders, and that was what we were like. We were disrespectful. We were punk kids. We loved pushing the limits. We loved pushing decency out the window. Like, that was me and my crew. Like,
so what you're saying is you guys were big dicks.
Yes. Yes. And Jackass really influenced us. I didn't even know Big Brother was a thing, to be honest. And this documentary was really insightful in catching me up. Like, these are where these characters came, or not characters, these are where these people came from. You know, the history of the magazine, how it came into being with, you know, the competition with Trans World. I enjoyed it. But on the other hand, I can say as a critic, if you don't like Jackass, this documentary isn't going to be up your alley.
Now, that is exactly the fatal flaw of it.
Yeah.
Here's the problem, the big problem with the doc. Well, it's mostly talking heads. I think that's a big problem. Just sort of visually, it gets a little boring that they're cutting back and forth. But mm-hmm. one of the greatest moments of the doc, can I say, like, the height of it, and I think that you mentioned to it when mentioned it to me when you talked about it, hey, you should see this doc, is Johnny Knoxville shoots himself.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you see this long video where Johnny Knoxville, he did this thing where he wanted to try out like self-defense stuff. So it was like he electrocuted,
yeah, like tasers,
and just all these different self-defense tools. He tried them out on himself. And then the finale of it was he buys this super cheap, like a bulletproof vest. Mm-hmm. He didn't get the most expensive one. He got the one he could afford.
Yeah.
They went out to the desert because they didn't want to get in trouble. And the entire crew is like, let's like turn off the, we got to stop this. They're scared that he's going to die. And Johnny Knoxville, unbeknownst to me, I guess he moved to Hollywood to be an actor, mm-hmm. which isn't surprising.
From Kentucky.
Yeah. Moved out to be an actor. His then wife was pregnant. He'd lived in LA and really had limited success, and being affiliated with Big Brother was sort of a last resort for him. So he was like going to shoot himself in the chest,
mm-hmm.
and he does it, and it all happens. You see him, you know, you see, and it's unbelievable his reaction. He was like pumped with adrenaline. He didn't, you know, clearly it hurt, but he jumped in the car, took off the bulletproof vest, and he had the gun with him, and they just took off. This video, I mean, it's shocking. Yeah. It's the best piece of video that's in the entire documentary, and it's near the last half of it. But
they have a shot where he takes off the bulletproof vest, and you can see the t-shirt that he was wearing with the bullet hole.
Right. He's got a t-shirt with the bullet hole.
Yeah.
A charred t-shirt.
Yeah.
So okay, but aside from that footage, it's mostly talking heads with this, which is an issue. And here's the problem: if you don't care about Jackass, you're not going to be into this doc. Now, I knew Big Brother magazine because I loved buying all the alternative magazines, and they didn't necessarily have to, like, there weren't a lot of alternative movie magazines at the time. This is the Film Threat was started in 1985 as a fanzine, Xeroxed, and then grew into a magazine in the 90s and was purchased by Larry Flint, who owned it for a brief period in 1991. So there is parallel history with Big Brother, because Big Brother also was this underground magazine that then was purchased by Larry Flynt, I think later in the mid-90s, like 95, right? And then he owned it for a number of years, but I'll get to that in a second. But what's interesting is I was into all these alt magazines. There was a magazine called The Nose, which was kind of like spy magazine but it was based in San Francisco. Hmm. That was published by Jack Boulware. Then there was Spy Magazine, of course, which was larger mainstream, but also made fun of a lot of stuff. Big Brother. There was another great one called Ben is Dead, which was fantastic. Put together, just that magazine was great. Ben is Dead, I thought, was amazing. But there are a lot of alternative magazines. Film Threat was one of them, but the focus being on movies. Big Brother, the focus, I guess it was sort of around the world of skateboarding, but it was more about the attitude. What was interesting to me watching it was how similar our attitudes were.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm watching this going like, holy shit. Like, we're doing this documentary about Film Threat called Film Threat Sucks. These are very similar, like, it's like we had similar attitudes. Even though I wasn't into skateboarding, that sort of 90s fuck you attitude was, you know, pervasive with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Skate culture, and then also at least with the staff of Film Threat. But what was really funny to me as watching this is both Film Threat and Big Brother were purchased by Larry Flynt.
Yeah.
Larry Flint's in their doc. I think it's undetermined whether Larry Flynt will be in the Film Threat doc or not. But so in this documentary, they talk about that they had to wear ties to work. And it was like, yeah, we're skateboarders. We're not going to wear ties. We had to wear ties. There was this like dress code that came down from working at Larry Flynt. So none of the people who work for me, they're like, fuck it. We don't want to wear ties. So I did. I was like, all right, I'll be an example. I'll wear a fucking tie. But I would keep a drawer of clip-on ties in my desk in my office in case there was a pink alert, which was Larry Flynt. You could see in the carpet that were like marks that a wheelchair had been on the carpet. So plus I did a spot on Larry Flynt imitation whenever I would call people and put myself on speakerphone and I would say, this is Larry Flynt. Can you bring over the pagination to Donna Hunter to bring it up to Jim Cole's office? So anyways.
Yeah, you nailed it.
No, and then here's what I found, what shocked me. My jaw hit the floor when I'm watching this documentary. One of the editors at Big Brother mentioned how, you know, because they're working in this weird corporate environment for Larry Flynt, they worked stuff in, like, they had, like, one of the sides set, just spelled the word pussy.
Yeah.
And then, like, they worked on, like, we used to do that in Film Threat. We would have, like, the first letter of the side of a column would like a crossword would spell things like, you know, fuck you and stuff like that. So, which was really difficult to have all those letters line up, but those guys put it on the cover. Mm-hmm. That was pretty incredible. So what was it? So I'm watching this doc going, we really have very similar stories. Not that like, we're like, look, different magazine, but the magazine part of that story is very similar. So it took me aback a little bit, like, wow. Plus their documentary's made. I've been talking about getting the Film Threat documentary made for fucking years. And, you know, look, there's some movement. It's 2 years away. 2019 is the year that the Film Threat doc will hit. That's the plan. But okay. Take me out of it. I didn't love it as much as you did, mm-hmm. but I did like knowing, because I was a Jackass fan. I was a Big Brother fan. Here's the thing. I never connected that those two were related. I knew that some of the guys from Jackass wrote for Big Brother, but I didn't realize that it was like this same group, like just sort of.
Yeah. I mean, Bam Margera came from posting, or not posting, but sending in stuff when he was like 14 years old. Into Big Brother magazine, and they were publishing it. And, you know, like we said, Steve-O, Chris Pontius, like the core Jackass crew really came together because of this magazine. The reason why I love this film is because, you know, it transported me back to like 2000, the year 2000. I'm a little punk rock teenage kid getting all of this, you know, Jackass TV, like kind of just really seeing it and really responding to it. And me and my idiot friends, we would do stupid shit like that. Like in my mom's Yukon, my buddy Joe Brown pierced his ball sack with a fucking safety pin. And we were emulating this kind of stuff. This is where it came from. Like,
can I just tell you? Mm-hmm. I didn't emulate that stuff. I just read Big Brother magazine and thought, this is parody and satire, but I'm not going to stick a safety pin through my balls.
Yeah, I mean, we had this tape. It was kind of like a local legend where we would videotape stupid shit. We would videotape somebody jumping off of something. We would videotape somebody running their bike head on into a parked car and going through the windshield. That happened, and we had to pay for it. But we made this tape in hopes that we could send it to Jackass and become stars. We didn't know that Jackass was this group of people that did it. We thought Jackass was you send in content.
Kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos.
Exactly. But that culture, just that irreverent.
Well, it did sort of hit the 90s, which is, so I'm watching this doc and I'm thinking to myself that like this, it is somewhat similar to what we're attempting to do. I could just say that like the Film Threat doc will definitely be it'll be a completely different take, but there were three or four things that stood out to me as like, oh my God, it was like reliving my experience working at Larry Flint Publications doing Film Threat.
See, that's what I thought you would get a kick out of because there are similarities.
I did get a kick out of it. But I was also like, fuck, I'm behind on getting this thing made.
Well,
so it did sort of, it also made me sad. But you should not, I don't think that my opinion on this should be taken as valid because I feel like I'm too close to it. Meaning, having come from the magazine business in the 90s, this movie hit too close to home. So I think my criticism of it is invalid and my opinion should be completely negated. I am recusing myself. I am recusing myself. Like Jeff Sessions, our attorney general from the Russian investigation of Donald Trump, I'm recusing myself from a review of Dumb, the Story of Big Brother magazine. Is that the full name of the documentary?
Yeah.
All I remember is Dumb.
Dumb, the Story of Big Brother, I think.
Yeah, Dumb, the Story of Big Brother. Yeah. I am recusing myself of having an opinion. You should negate my opinion and completely ignore my words at this very moment.
All right, and piggybacking off of that, I am saying that my opinion is solely based on the fact that I love Jackass and solely based on the fact that my life was so close to the culture that magazine captured, and it really brought back a wave of nostalgia.
Yeah, all right. I dig it. Okay. All right. Well, all right. Let's talk about before we go in to see The Mummy. There's a film you saw this week which I did not get a chance to see.
Yes.
You're super excited about. What's the name of the film?
The movie is called Future 38.
And how is it?
it's amazing. The concept of the movie is that they find this 1930s film about time travel where the main character Essex, he goes into the future to the year 2018, and it's the 1930s version of what they thought the future was going to be.
And so it's like basically they uncovered a movie from the 30s that was a future film about 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, cool.
And there's these hilarious, like the whole thing is just a lot of visual gags, like what, you know, what the 30s imagined the 2000s fashion would be. They're just hilarious. Like they're wearing goggles and speaking in weird like 1930s slang. They have a machine that emulates the internet, but it like prints out like these little fortune cookie like strips of paper. So there's a scene.
Someone just said a tweet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's how they do text. Blade Runner's Sean Young is a cameo. She plays the operator. They still have operators.
Oh, my God.
Did make their phone calls, and she has a nice little cameo. But there's a lot of social commentary in it, too, where it kind of plays on the fact that the past thought we would be more evolved and more progressive than we actually are. There's a throwaway line about how marriage has same-sex marriage has been legalized for the past 50 years, where in our timeline it's been like legalized like less than 10.
Right, right.
There's just it's it
reminds
me.
It reminds me of a film similar in this vein called Man of the Century. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of that movie?
No, no.
It played Slam Dance years ago, but Man of the Century is about a guy. They don't really explain it, but it's this guy like from the 20s that somehow comes to the present, and he's. So it's definitely a social commentary about commenting on how the past sees the future. Does that make sense? So Man of the Century, I would say that, you know, if Future 38, which is it, isn't Future 38, didn't it just come out for VOD?
No,
I believe it's about to come out.
It's about to come out.
About to come out. Okay, so who knows? By the time you're listening to this, Future 38 could be out, but.
But definitely check it out. The cast all does the kind of old-timey, like, you know, voice, diction.
Ah, old-timey stuff. Yeah. Yep. Like, kind of like Mr. Burns.
Yep. It reminded me so much of like, the old-school science fiction movies, like Things to Come, Forbidden Planet. They have robots that are just straight up, like, aluminum foil wrapped.
Wait,
people.
Did they say robots?
Yes. Yes. And, No.
I love that pronunciation of robot. Robot.
They're the best, hands down. Like, this movie has the best, like, oral sex innuendos. They're,
what?
Yeah. Like,
because first of all, just we're sitting in a car in the parking lot at Universal City Walk.
Yes.
We're holding microphones, and you say oral sex.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, that is. And people are walking by, and they're looking into the car. What are these two guys doing with microphones?
Yeah.
So we're getting weird looks. Yeah. I just want to make you. I just want to. If you're not uncomfortable now, I just want to set the scene so you can feel as uncomfortable as Anthony feels right at this very moment.
Yeah, I'm sure my cheeks are red if they weren't covered in a beard fur. No, this movie I highly recommend it, especially if you're a Futurama fan.
So the Futurama is like a like the influence in terms of the sense of humor?
I would say so. It's very like the jokes are very quick paced and very, you know, sight gag-ish.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll look forward to your review on filmthreat.com.
Yes.
Which is can I let people know about an Easter egg that's on the Film Threat website? I gotta let people know. Okay, well, a couple quick things. One, we started this dumb promotion where I had friends. I would basically take, when I was at Phoenix Comic Con, we had all these Film Threat stickers that we were giving out to people. And we took one of the Film Threat stickers and we put it on a beer, a light beer, and then just were drinking it and saying, like, taste the threat. Taste Film Threat-alicious. Oh my gosh, I love these reviews. But you're like drinking a beer, but with the Film Threat sticker on it. So if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Film Threat, 5042 Wilshire Boulevard, that's Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California, 90036, we'll send you some Film Threat stickers. And then do us a favor, take one of those stickers, put it on a can of your favorite beverage, drink it, and just say, I love their reviews, or something stupid. Swear, do whatever you want. Tweet at us, at Film Threat, and I'll retweet your video. Does that seem reasonable? It's just awesome. A fun thing. It's a fun thing we could do. Maybe it'll go viral. You never know. Who knows? But okay, so here's a little Easter egg on the Film Threat website. If you go to filmthreat.com every day, you'll notice that there's a new cover story, a new main story as our big hero image on the site. If you cursor in the lower left or the lower right corner of the big hero image, you'll find, if you have to have the cursor in just the right spot, arrows. And if you click those arrows, it'll take you to previous stories that were on Film Threat for the past month. So if you go to Film Threat and you're like, I haven't visited in a week, you can just sort of cursor down to that little, you'll find that little arrow and you'll cursor and you'll see the cover stories for the last week. All right, we've got to go catch our mother.
I didn't know that, by
the way. You didn't know that?
No. No, dude. Never told me.
I'm telling you now, you got to try it. It's actually really cool. Okay, so we are going to head into our screening of The Mummy and we'll tell you what we thought of The Mummy after a screening. So we just got out of the screening and unbelievable, incredible.
So well made.
Amazing. First of all, cannot believe it, how incredible it was.
Yeah, it took me by surprise.
Yeah, no, it was the seats in the theater.
They reclined. Oh my gosh.
So comfortable. They had this electronic recliner. This is the new Universal City Walk movie theater where they have the reclining seats, and the seats were indescribable.
Two thumbs up. Are we allowed to say that?
We could say two. Okay. I don't know if we are. We can, but we are right now. Yeah. Fuck it. Two thumbs up for the seats.
Way up.
the seats in the movie theater where we saw The Mummy. Now we should talk about The Mummy.
Oh, God.
We should
Do
talk
we have
about,
to? We, I think yeah, we can get another 10 minutes on the seats, please.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because we want to be positive, but I don't know. I got it. So now it's time to talk about The Mummy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what
it's
what?
Mess. Oh my God! So, okay. So, first of all, okay. By the way, we should warn spoilers. Although there's not that many spoilers, and here's what's interesting: Anthony Ray Bench, you predicted the end of the movie.
I did
before, and you should have said it on the podcast. I told you. I said, why didn't you say that on the podcast? As we're going into the screening, he says, What did you say?
I said, I'm calling it now. I bet by the end of the movie, Tom Cruise turns out to be the mummy. Like, he either breaks the curse and takes on the curse himself, or he, you know, was a reincarnated, you know, version of the mummy. I knew by the end of the movie they weren't going to let this unknown actress be the mummy in, like, a franchise film. They had to have Tom Cruise.
And we should say also that the beginning of the movie started with this logo that said Dark Universe.
Yeah, they are really counting their chickens before they hatch.
Yeah, so dark, they're counting on this being a connected universe, science fiction, horror, fantasy. So
this is their third attempt at that. Their first one was Van Helsing. That was supposed to be sequel bait. The second one was Dracula Untold, which ended with like a little post-credit, like he's in the modern world and Charles Dance's character says something about, like, you know, he has no idea what's coming or some bullshit, set it up. Their third fucking attempt. And if this movie does not make money, which I don't think it will, what are they going to do? Like,
I don't know. But I have to say, the Brendan Fraser mummy movies.
Was better.
Were fun.
Yeah.
They were fun.
They were decent.
That's what was missing from this film. It was as if, well, this is the thing. We all know from seeing past Tom Cruise movies, he loves to run. Mm-hmm. A lot, yep. Which he does a lot in this film. And a lot of the scares. Okay, so just to, because fuck it, we're going to spoil it because we're basically saving you. We're saving you the time. So they uncover this mummy in not in Egypt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a hidden mummy, which.
In Iraq.
In Iraq, yeah. So, and then they steal it, which is weird because they're stealing these treasures, which was a little strange because they glossed over that. And then he doesn't die he dies in a plane crash, but he doesn't die. But all this is in the trailer, by the way.
Yeah.
So everything I'm telling you is already, there's actually not much that isn't in the trailer that's in the movie. The only thing is like the ending, which you guessed it, which mm-hmm. is actually given away in the trailer because Tom Cruise's eyes split. They give it away.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I hadn't seen that trailer.
Yeah, so there's a trailer where Tom Cruise's eyes split like the mummy split. So, but it's like, okay, I liken this to the Sam Raimi Evil Dead films starring Bruce Campbell, which I love.
Yeah,
those movies are just fun. They're just made with passion and love for the genre, and it's basically Sam Raimi as director beating the shit out of, in a fun way, Bruce Campbell. And Bruce Campbell is charming and likable throughout, and Bruce Campbell is funny. Tom Cruise is not funny.
No,
he may be likable, but he's definitely not funny. And the comic relief in this film, which was the guy from he was also in Jurassic World.
Yeah, so he's from New Girl.
He's from New Girl, and he's sort of the sidekick in this, and basically completely ripped off Griffin Dunn's character from American Werewolf in London.
You know, like, he's not featured in any of the trailers, right?
Right,
so
right.
When he showed up, I was like, man, I don't like that actor. Like,
I liked him. I liked him in the bit part he was in Jurassic World.
But I'm looking at the screen, and I'm just like, man, like, well, he's not in any of the promotional material. He's not in any of the trailers or the posters or anything. Maybe he's just going to be in it for a little bit, and then he's going to die off. And I kept waiting for that to happen. And finally he did, and I was like, yes, he's gone. Oh, my gosh. And then they brought him back as, like, the zombie
character. An undead version.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was
like,
fuck.
But the thing is that, like, it's like Sam Raimi used to love to kind of beat up Bruce Campbell in kind of a fun way, and you'd see Bruce Campbell, like, I don't know. Bruce Campbell just has a charm and a charisma that Tom Cruise lacks. Tom Cruise has a different kind of charisma and a different kind of charm. It's not based in comedy, and that's what was missing from this film. The other thing is Russell Crowe's character, who is Dr. Jekyll / Mr. Hyde, in a weird thing where, like, we were talking to one, I don't want to say who, we were talking to another person who attended the screening, because what's weird is he has this sort of digital makeup when he turns into Mr. Hyde that basically gives him blackface.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like, well, when he turns evil, he turns dark. And I don't think that people are going to, I mean, look, we live in a hypersensitive society when it comes to, you know, social issues now, especially on social media. But it was just bad design. Like, the one thing, and then the other, we were talking about how, say what you will about the DC movie universe. And of course, we talked about Wonder Woman, last week, but the designs of those characters I think are great. The character design of the DC characters, their costumes, that world, the music in this Mummy movie, the music is just forgettable because it's constant. So the music is so constant, it's forgettable. And secondly, the character design of the monsters, is bad. And the fact that, like, here's the one thing in fantasy, and this is, I rail on this constantly, fantasy, i.e. a fantasy film, a science fiction, a horror film, if you're going to break the reality, you know, but break all of the rules of reality and the rules of the universe we live in, you still need rules.
Yes.
You need rules. So in a zombie movie, it's well established that if you get bitten by the undead, you will then turn and become undead, and the only way to kill the undead is to shoot them in the head. Pretty much all you need to know. In this movie, what are the rules? They're making them up as they go along,
yeah,
and they seem to change, and we don't know what they are, and yeah. Like,
so the MacGuffin in this movie is this little gem, right? And it attaches to the sword and the dagger, and the dagger is supposed to be used in a ritual. At the very end of the movie, none of the characters reference this. None of the characters mention it. At the very end of the movie, Tom Cruise's character goes, oh, I could just break this thing. It's like the mummy's been chasing it the entire fucking movie. Why didn't you think of breaking it, like, right off the bat? There was no, like, explanation as, like, if we do this, this is what happens. That's why we don't want it to do it. Like, there was nothing. It's just at the end, he was like, I'm going to break it.
I mean, yeah, stupid. Like, that's what he should have known at the beginning. And the other thing is, like, the scares in this movie, if you think that this is going to be a scary movie, they're all telegraphed.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, there's something hovering in the background. I wonder if it'll, oh, it did exactly what I thought.
Loud noises do not equate scares.
Yeah.
They don't.
Well, especially when, like, there wasn't one scare that was a surprise.
Yeah.
All of the scares were telegraphed.
I gotta say, from...
They were all, like, they were all just... they were lame.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when they announced, like, I enjoy the 1999, The Mummy movie. I do. I'm more of a fan of the Boris Karloff one from, I think, like, what was it, like,
19... the one where the mummy just walks really slow?
Yes, but it's an atmospheric movie. It's good. Well,
but I feel like what this film plays on is a primal fear of someone's going to get me. Look at all horror films. Yeah. It's something's going to get me. I'm trying to run away. Something's going to get me, which is rooted in a lot of our lizard brain dreams, right? Like something is going to get me. And I'm afraid it's going to get me. And that's, this entire movie is them running and running and running away from these sort of, like, weird undead things that are dust. If you punch them, they just sort of, your foot goes through them. It's because they're just dead.
They have no consistency, but they can choke people to death.
They can choke. I mean, yeah. Like, and then they're like, well, then why are they afraid of them? I feel like at a certain point you're like, F it, you know. They're just, are they scared because they're gross? They're not good looking like Tom Cruise is.
Yeah.
Because all of the villains in this are ugly. So is it like, I'm going to stand up for the ugly. What?
But here's the thing. The original Mummy and the sequels are.
We're talking about the original Mummy. Yeah. There have been 900 Mummy movies.
I know. I'm talking about the Universal Pictures ones. You say the original Mummy.
Okay, the one with Brendan Fraser.
No, no, no. I'm talking about the original.
In the 30s with Boris Karloff.
Yes, yes. They are iconic classic movies that have very tense atmosphere, and they're very well made for their time. I mean, they are iconic, both in design and.
Although,
both...
if you watch them now, you'd be bored as hell, probably.
I'm not.
Unfortunately.
Well, I grew up with them, so.
All right.
Anyways. So when The Mummy came out in 1999, I watched it and I thought, okay, this is good, but it wasn't scary. It was more of like they wanted to do
more of an adventure.
Yeah,
like
they wanted to do
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
They wanted to do an Indiana Jones movie and they didn't have the property, so they created their own characters. Brendan Fraser is pretty
much. It worked.
Oh, it worked. The first one was fantastic and entertaining, and I liked it, but I always thought, like, I wish they would just remake The Mummy as a horror movie, how it originally was, kind of take that action and kind of goofy, campy comedy out of it. When they announced this, that was the plan that they announced. Oh, you know, Tom Cruise is going to be in a reboot, and it's going to be a dark horror movie, and then they released the trailer, and I'm like, okay, this looks like crap. Then they released that it was going to be PG-13, and I'm like, all right, there's good horror movies that are PG-13, but usually it means we're going to get cheap scares, and we're going to get jump scares, and it's just going to be a mess. But I had hope, and you know what gave me hope? The fact that Kong Skull Island was such a good movie, and the trailers for that were crap. The buzz around that movie was just non-existent. I hoped that this would surprise me. I hoped that this would get me excited about, you know, Universal's dark universe that they're probably going to get sued from Warner Brothers over. I wanted this to be good. I wanted it to be good so
bad. Of course.
Bad.
Well, I want every movie, you know, I want to enjoy every film we see, but this wasn't it. So, final thoughts on this are that you should
leave it buried in the desert. Just fucking leave it.
Well, at least Future 38 was really good.
Oh my God.
And what's so funny, here's the thing. This movie was worse than Dumb was better than this movie. Dumb, the documentary Dumb is better than The Mummy.
I like Dumb, so that doesn't say much.
I like Dumb too. I just had some issues that had nothing to do with the movie, that more to do with my personal experience.
Okay, I have a question
for you. Because I'm connected to that, so in some way.
Do you prefer this movie or The Mummy Returns?
What?
Yeah.
The Mummy Returns, like with...
Really?
What?
I thought this movie was slightly better than The Mummy Returns. Very slightly. I hate The Mummy Returns.
All right, well...
What about The Scorpion King? Do you like this one better than Scorpion King?
Well, Scorpion King was dumb.
Yeah.
But the Scorpion King was entertaining.
Yeah, okay.
It had The Rock in it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think Scorpion.
Yeah, no.
King
this is. I don't know who the thing is. Everyone needs a Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
You know who needs a Kevin Feige? The Star Wars universe needs a Kevin Feige.
Yes.
The Star Wars universe
and not
needs
J.J. Abrams. Please.
Or
not
Kathleen
J.J. Abrams.
Kennedy. They're not.
Or Kathleen Kennedy. Yes.
I don't think that they. I don't think they have the stuff. But I feel like if you're going to do something like this, you entrust maybe a TV producer with a vision and let them do something creative.
Mm-hmm.
But wow.
So
what a piece of shit. I'm sorry. This was garbage.
Up next for the Dark Universe is apparently Bride of Frankenstein starring Javier Bardem. And apparently they're trying to get Angelina Jolie as the bride. Do you think it's going to get made if this movie tanks?
I have no idea. I don't know. I feel does Angelina Jolie need money? I feel like that's going to answer that question.
No.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Film Threat Podcast. I'm That Chris Gore. You can follow me at That Chris Gore. And all podcasts end with and where can we find you on social media?
Some people do it right at the beginning.
If you're fucking listening to this, you probably already know where to find us. So who fucking cares? We should just end with,
let's get out of here.